right, Lashinda Demus, the woman, the myth, the legend.
Myth?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you were like a beast, you know? And it's funny because, you know, for me, the whole point of this podcast is just to talk to some of, like, you know, some influential track and field people, medalists, people who pretty much got to the peak of their game. And anytime I think of, like, all the people I know, you're always, like, you're, like, one of the best athletes I've ever met. It's crazy. Like, you're... And so, wait, before we go too far into it, let me read off Lashinda's resume. And please correct me. Correct me if I mess up anything. It's not intentional. So, let me see. I'm going to start in high school because you were a beast in high school, right? So you won that National High School 4x4 record team, right?
Yep.
You were twice named the Girls High School Athlete of the Year by Track and Field News. I think you were the only person to get that back-to-back.
Yeah.
And you were the high school record holder in the 300-meter hurdles, right?
Yeah.
You won the World Junior Championship in Jamaica. Do you know I was there?
You were?
I was there.
I didn't know that, though, Adrian, because we were at school together.
Yeah, but, like, no. That was before I got to SC.
Was it?
It was the summer before. It's 2002. So, y'all won the championship, and then it was Jamaica, and then SC. So a couple of y'all were there, but y'all were too good and y'all didn't know me. So, you know, they were all the good people, you know.
A lot of us were on that team, Kenny and Batman.
I know, all of them. I saw all of y'all. I ran mad slow. See, what happened, I'm not making excuses, but, like, it had that weird starting gun sound and I didn't know what it was.
And I started
100 mad late and got smoked. So it was rough times. So, wait, let me go back to your resume. So you won there. That was a cool meet. Let's see. You're an NCAA indoor champion in the 400 meters.
Yeah.
Your personal best in the four hurdles, 52.47, which right now is the fifth fastest time ever.
How sad is that?
Well, I mean, you were third until, like, last year, right?
Yeah, literally.
Yes. You had the American record before. Mm-hmm. Two young ladies went ahead and ran really, really fast.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing now. Shoot. lifetime.
Wait, silver medal in the 2005 World Championships.
Yeah.
And you have the, what was it, the silver, 2011 World Championship and 2012 Olympic silver medalist in London.
Yeah.
All right, I think I got everything. Yeah. So, yeah, so two world championship golds, two silvers and a bronze, a bunch of hardware, beast mode. 52 seconds in the four hurdles is crazy. I would assume the people listening to this are track people, so we're going to be a lot of people who hear that. She's running 52 seconds over hurdles. Yeah, so we just had the moment of silence to pause for a second. Yes.
I think about how I used to run now because I can't even run to – the gas pump or anything.
I know. I don't run anywhere. I'm so lazy. It's crazy. I think that's what happens when you're running track since, like, elementary. You're like, I'm good.
Literally, yeah.
So not only was Lashinda a beast in the four hurdles, but obviously she's an NCAA 400-meter champion. And I believe I've seen you do some amazing things on some 4x8s, if I'm not mistaken. I feel like you split, like, two flat or something one day, like 10 meters.
Oh, Lord.
Just, you know. And then Javi still ran on the 4x4 after.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
So try to care. You already know that.
Yeah, exactly. So just a little resume, folks, in case you didn't know. Now you know. So, Lashinda, please.
And
just
I was
tell
the
us.
NCAA champion, too. NCAA champion in the 400 hurdles freshman
year.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Freshman year.
That's
right.
That was the only reason.
We just want to hear about your journey. You know, a lot of folks want to know what it takes to get to that level. And everybody who has a gold medal has a crazy story, for the most part, I mean, what it takes to get to that point. So we just want to hear about, you know, whatever.
Okay. So, I started running when I was 5 years old. So I come from a family of track athletes. My mom was a track athlete as well. She ran the flat 4 and the 2, and she was pretty good. She she stopped running, I think, before her prime. I think she was in her early 20s when she decided to give it up. But she did travel to Europe and run, and she did the same, the circuit. Some of the meets that I went to, she went to.
In the blood, right.
Yes, in the blood. So she was an athlete as well. My older sister was actually running track first. She's 6 years older than me. We were in the neighborhood. A guy who had a youth track club seen her and was like, come out to my track team. My mom took her out there. Before then, she did not think about putting us in sports, especially she was good. And I don't see why she wouldn't have, but it wasn't a thought of hers. So following behind my older sister, I wanted to run track naturally. So, and I tell people that it was something that I had in me that I just automatically knew I was fast, period. I thought I was always the fastest child, boy or girl. I would ask anybody if they wanted to race. Super competitive, even at the age of 5. And just never wanted to lose. And I had to kind of grow out of being a sore loser. I was a sore loser throughout my career professionally as well. But I knew, you know, I was just more mature. But as a kid, it was bad, you know, losing, you know. And so it started there. I used to compete against 7-year-olds because at that time they didn't have a division where 5-year-olds could compete in LA. So I would run against 7-year-olds and I wouldn't win, you know, but I would get third, fourth. You're talking about they're 2 years older than me. And, so I thought I was a sprinter at first and I would be really good in my region. But when I would go outside of my region, I would get beat. So my mom would move me up until I stopped losing. All right, let's try the 4. So I can go to pretty much all of California and not get beaten to 4 except for Monique Henderson. I would never beat her. When we were kids, she was really good. So she ran 15 years old and I think I ran about 60.
Yeah.
So she was really good. So I moved up to the 800, and that's where I never lost. So I ran the 800. Yeah, I was an 800 runner because I had the speed and I had the endurance and strength, you know, and I trained ridiculously hard. That's another thing I tell parents. I'm like, it's nothing that you can do if your child doesn't want it themselves. Like, they have to want to win. They have to want to work. You can't. Even if they have talent. I know a lot of talented people that were just as talented as I was, but they didn't work as hard.
Yeah.
And that was just it. But so, yeah, I ran the 800 meters from about 10 years old to 14. I won the Junior Olympics every year. In that time frame, I broke the junior record. I ran 213 at the age of 12.
Wow.
Something like that. And, but believe it or not, some girl broke my record.
I believe that, yeah.
It's like, these kids are good.
Hey, records, they're meant to be broken.
Well, that's sad, but, you know, that one was there for quite a while, so I was like, okay. But, so anyway, at track practice, I was out there, and we had, like, a hurdle coach who was actually the boys' coach, and a lot of kids were just trying hurdles. I might have been around 10 or 11, just trying them. He had them on the grass and just telling us to jump over. And for me, just emulating what I seen at track meets and on TV, I was just a natural hurdler and three-stepping and everything. So they didn't have an event for me at that age, but I did become familiar with at least jumping over them. And it wasn't until I think 7th or 8th grade where I started, you know, hurdling. And then once I went to high school, I completely stopped the 800 and started hurdling completely. So my hurdles coach was he was an Olympian actually in high school.
Earl McCullough.
Wow.
Yeah, Earl McCullough. He was a 110 Olympian, 110 hurdler. So that was my coach in high school, and he was really good, really helpful, just a technician. I love being under him, and I never went back to the 800 since then.
Yeah, that's really
history.
Yeah. So tell us about, I want to hear about this, because I always hear these great relay sagas, you know. So when you guys went for the national record, I know there had to be some great rivalry going on or some crazy competition.
In college? Was it?
No, I'm still in high school. I haven't gotten to college.
Shoot, yeah. So I went to Long Beach Wilson. Our big rival was Long Beach Poly, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a huge rivalry. Like our dual meets were crazy. it was like high school track in California is super big. Super big. So we're filling up stadiums.
Yeah.
But so yeah, it was always a big deal. The coaches were into the rivalry as well, and you know, it was always talking smack and doing whatever, but at the end of the day, we were all good afterwards. Like, I see them now, people that I used to compete against, and we're cool. But back then, it was real. We did not want to lose to each other at all.
Yeah. It's fun. How'd you end up at SC?
Let's see. My dad wanted me to go to Southern Cal, USC, and my mom wanted me to go to UCLA. I didn't want to go to Southern Cal because I just grew up in the area. I didn't want to go there. UCLA was a thought, but I knew I wanted to leave California. My mom followed track heavily, and she always would say, "You know about those Barber twins?" And I'm like, "No, I didn't follow college track." So I'm like, "No." She's like, "Yeah, one of them is really fast, and you know, she ran this, that, and the 400. So that's when I started to at least look at the results with South Carolina in it. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I would see that they were like the top in the 400 meters. And I just assumed like, well, if they're getting a 400, I know I can be getting the 400 hurdles just training with them. So that's when it became like an option. And I said, okay, I'll go on a visit. And I actually thought like, I'm going to go here because it's nothing to do and I could just focus. You find stuff to do there.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't know what I was talking about. That was the mentality, though, because I like to have fun and you know whatever. But I say I really want to focus, so I'm going to go there, and that's how I moved there. I seen the girls were good, and I was like, all right, well, if I want to be the best, I need to go where the best is and get on that level. So
now I had the same thought process when I walked on. I was like, man, well, if I'm going to join a team, I'm going to go to where, you know, the guys just won the 4x4. They had Otis and John. I was like, yeah, I'm going to just join that team because I'm either going to, like, I'm not going to quit, so I have to get faster.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that you're still sharp as steel, so there's fast people there, and that's where I wanted to be.
Yeah, I'm telling you, New Jersey, and, I mean, AD is too, all on the Northeast, like, that was the school to go to. Everybody talked about South Carolina. You just mentioned the Barber twins. They're from Jersey, too. So
Jersey. It's
almost like where they went, everybody wanted to go, you know? New York and New Jersey. And I know Coach Fry used to recruit a lot in that area. So,
and you know what? That's a good point, Porter.
Yeah.
I said, that's a great point because Tawana Watkins from, she was at in Patterson, right?
Tawana Watkins, that was a huge name in Jersey. She had the Jersey high school record in 400 hurdles. Yep.
So. Yeah, I just spoke to her actually a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. That was in North Jersey, so I just used to hear about all the good people in the South Jersey area. But Patterson's up north, though. But I heard, you know, there always were rumors in high school that she had to train with the boys team, Tawana, because she just was,
you know, so good.
Just teaming up on everybody.
Yep. She was a beast.
Yeah. So South Carolina and national champ, and you won as a freshman. Mm-hmm. And you're also part of that national championship team. I definitely want to hear about that.
Yeah.
You know, a freshman year was quite a transitioning year for me. Like, I've never been scared of work. But remember, I came in, well, you don't remember. I came in the spring semester, not the fall semester.
Okay.
I actually made the World University team that summer as a high school. I was the youngest one on the team. We went to China and competed, and I was actually on that university team with Mickey and Lisa and Demetrius.
Wow.
And actually Josephus too, Pat from South Carolina. So all of us were out there. We were on that team, and I was the youngest one. I came back from there and came into South Carolina in the spring semester. But so I missed out on core training with the group. It was a lot. So it was tough for me. And I remember it was an inner squad meet, and Coach Fry put me in the 400 meters. And I did horrible, horrible. Like, I quit and everything. So I walked up to him, and I was like, yeah, I need to go train with the distance people for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. He's like, you want to go train with 800? I was like, I need to go train with the 800 runners. And I left, went and trained with the distance group and came back and was sharp. Nice. Went to indoors, ended up winning outdoor. But when I tell you, I was getting smoked at practice. I was like, yeah, this isn't working. I need something else. I need something to help me. And I went right over to that distance group and started training with them. But so that's when I was like, you know what? In high school, I was the fastest person on the team. And so I pretty much led the workouts. I set the tone of all the workouts. Mm-hmm. At South Carolina, everybody was fast. That's the difference. Everybody was fast. And it was like a track meet at practice. You didn't have an offset because somebody was always willing and ready to go. So it was tough to kind of just make that my new normal. So the first year was tough, but it ended up ending pretty well because I did end up going to the World Juniors, but it was a tough beginning.
Yeah, no, practice was intense, man. It was intense. Like, I was a walker, and I was like, you know, these guys, like, it was straight up racing all the time. The warm-up lap. Everyone was sprinting the last 100 meters. You're like, come on, you can't even let me win the warm-up lap?
I remember that.
Yeah, and then, like, this was the most competitive team I've ever seen. It was like you could be in the dining hall talking trash like, man, you can't beat me. Let's go to the track. We go to the track right now. And people go to the track and run like a 400. Not like from here to the wall, like a 400. It's crazy stuff.
That was you guys. The girls were competitive. Like, we were more so serious. Like, you guys made it a fun environment, but we were like, this.
Yeah,
all of us wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
Game time at practice. I mean, we were cool, but we all knew what each other were thinking. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be the best. You want to be the best.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was intense for sure. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, going in, you came in your spring semester and then you won a national championships and then you went to World Juniors. Now, what was the thought process or your mentality going into your sophomore year, having accomplished so much and then maybe thinking that you had to repeat it or the pressure or being the favorite? Like, how did you bounce back from that? And this is a theme probably that's going to be for the rest of this conversation, because you are one resilient person. Like, you are able to bounce back out of so many situations, but I'll talk about that more later. But let's start with this one. How did you come back your sophomore year and just, coming off that freshman year?
Being naive and young, I thought naturally that you're just supposed to progress in here. Mm-hmm. So, and in track, you would know that sometimes it's not true. Like, you'll be stuck at one time for a couple of years. But either way, so I just automatically assumed that I would just progress. If I put in the work, I would get better. And I wasn't even thinking about making an Olympic team at that time. It was just, I literally, in my mind, I thought, I want to be the best ever. I don't want anybody to come and say that they're better than me. That's how I thought. So I'm always willing to put in the work. I didn't think about, I thought about winning and I wanted to do better, but it was more like a daily mentality. So I don't know. I think I had short goals that turned into bigger goals in the process. So after freshman year and I did the World Juniors and I did the NCAA title, the next year was like, I want to win indoors. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I wasn't too far ahead, but I was thinking ahead. Right. And that's kind of how I've always been. It's on to the next one. I think I did another interview a couple of weeks ago and told them that one of the things that I wish I could take back is not living in the moment, because I was so on to the next goal. And since even a kid, I was so onto the next goal that I didn't have time to just really sit and say, oh, shoot, I won NCs as a freshman. Nobody did that in this event. I think that's what they said. And I didn't think anything of it, though. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, I was capable of winning, and that day I did.
Yeah.
So I didn't look at it as like a staple or anything like that, but I wish that I would have just kind of took some time to really embrace stuff that I worked really hard for that happened, and, you know, I didn't. But that was my mentality then. Just on to the next one. What do we have to win next?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's take that. I mean, we could stay in the college realm a little bit. I know Adrian likes to talk a little bit about that 2002 team championship a lot. So we spoke to Coach Fry a little bit about that and how that sticks out in his memory. What was that like? I know you guys knew that you can do it. You guys had so many studs on the team at the time, but everything had to go right, you know? So what was it like going into the meet, you know, winning, and then, of course, moving past that?
That was a good time. Like you said, it was a lot of studs on the team, and I think that we were also similar in the way we thought about the sport and thought about competition, that it was a puzzle that just came together. We all wanted to win so bad that I think we just willed our way to making sure everything happened the way it was supposed to. Mm-hmm. That's what I really think. And of course, we were all capable of doing as well as we did, but it was no way that we were going to allow it to go any other way. So very supportive. We were very supportive. Adrian, you weren't there that year, but our chance and our cheers was crazy.
I know it's hype because we were a hype team.
And it was all a part of, like, we wanted to make history. We knew what was on the line. The women's team, we were the first team in the school's history to win a national title. We knew what was on the line. We knew that we were able to be a part of history. And I think all of that stuff, we wanted it so bad that it was like, ain't nothing stopping us. Nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Were there any surprises that day? Or did everything kind of just go the way you guys thought?
Actually, Lisa Barber was the shocker. She almost won the open 400 meters. And I don't even think they counted her in the top. Yeah. She almost won it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was a cool thing that she did. So that was the shocker.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I know Portia was bringing up, we were talking the other day, she was bringing out the year that you guys wore all the pink. Go ahead. I know you were talking about Portia.
My goodness. Okay. So one of my favorite years, I think this was the year, this was 2004, I think? I think it was 2004. I'm not sure. But I remember you guys had taken this picture. You guys were going to nationals. You guys got new gear. And, you know, your colors are kind of like cranberry crimson and black. But you guys came out there with some pink tennis court shirts, fly with some matching sneakers. You had these cute little tops on. And everybody was posing. And I was like, oh, I want to be them right now.
I was totally not there. I think that was 05.
I was mad that
I missed out on that as well. Like, what the heck?
You weren't there?
These girls looking good now.
You
weren't there?
You guys were clean all the time. You guys had great warm-ups. Everybody looked good all the time. Crisp hair was always done. Like, I mean, people think that these kids now, like, have the nails and the makeup and the hair. I'm like, you guys. If you're a true track fan, you've been following for a long time. There's some teams that were bringing it. You guys, South Carolina, you guys were one of those teams that brought it all.
And I loved it. As much as he would complain, like, makeup and this, that, and the other. His idea.
Listen, do you see Fry at meets now? He's always fitted. I'm like, Fry, where you get that? Like, you always have some nice new cool outfit. Come on, man.
I remember one year at Penn Relays, he custom made these like Superman shirts. We had like Superman emblem on it.
That's
and
crazy.
Then he had like the Gamecock stuff on the back. But he did that. And it's like, yeah, so just wear these shirts, and we wore them, you know, running.
And I'm a fan of that stuff, man. You know, track is, I mean, you can do that. It's kind of cool when you can go out there and look good, you feel good, and it makes you confident, like you can perform, you know? It's,
yeah. So he was into it. He tried to act like he wasn't. He was into that.
Yeah. So coming out of this, I want to hear about some of the pro stuff. You know, I know that transitioning from college track to pro is always tough. A lot of, you know, I've been through it. A lot of people I know have been through it. You know, how did you handle that? And then going into your, you know, the world championships and, you know, all the other big stuff.
Becoming a professional athlete, let me just say this. Ever since I was a little girl, I was told I was able to become an Olympian. I would get a scholarship for, you know, any school that I wanted to go to, all these things. So I expected to do well. Because I'm just telling people, and that's why I know that's why I was so good. It's the mentality, but I expected things to happen because number one, my mom and dad from the beginning were telling me things that I didn't even care about at that time. I'm 9 years old and you're telling me about college.
Yeah.
I love it.
So literally, I'm going back, but literally in high school, the process of taking the SATs and clearing house and all that stuff, that wasn't in my mind. I just thought, oh, I'm going to college. You know, I had to be told, like, oh, it's things that, you know, you have to do. But, no, they said, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. So, anyway, that's kind of how I was thinking. But, so, becoming a professional athlete, so it wasn't until probably my junior year when I made that first Olympic team in 04 that I myself decided I wanted to make the team. That year, I knew this was something that I wanted to do and, you know, not something that somebody told me I should do. So once I knew that I made the decision, I thought that I would make the team. I thought that I would be good. I even thought that I would win a gold medal. That wouldn't happen, you know, but that's what I thought. So the transition more so was hard for me traveling and being away for so long. From just like family and friends. That part was hard. I never backed down from competition. I wasn't scared to compete against anyone. I was in elementary school running against high school kids before. Like, I was in high school running against college kids. My senior year in high school, I went to U.S. Nationals, senior nationals, and competed and got fit. Wow. So I never was afraid of competition. Never. And I looked at the times. I wasn't that far from what, you know, what I seen. So I'm like, I mean, I wasn't that far from their time. So why would I be scared to compete against them? So the transition as far as competing, it was a breeze for me. I wanted to be good. This was just the next step. That's how I looked at it. Training by yourself and not having like a team around you, like the college team, how we were like in it together, and that was hard to not have. I miss being in the weight room with the team. I miss going to practice, being with a group of people that was hurting just like me. Yeah. You know, that group became smaller, and I was sometimes by myself, and I had to find my own weightlifting coach and stuff like that. That was hard to kind of convert to as well. But when I tell you I adapt. To competition, and I'm talking about quickly. So,
Olympics in 04, that was Athens. I was there with you. So you probably didn't notice. Portia, the fast folks are always like over there somewhere, and us, you know, the slower folks are kind of, we're there, but you know, we're over there somewhere, you know. But
Andrew, we were in the dining hall together a lot. We
whatever.
Ate.
Whatever. So yes, no, and that is a fun experience, the Olympics. I remember, I hope I'm not putting anyone on blast. It was weird because I remember one of my fondest memories, and it may seem weird, is we were in a dining hall, and I don't know if you were there, but I think Siobhan may have been there, or Sean Crawford was there, and he was eating like 8 yogurt parfaits from the McDonald's. And I was like, is he really just this is what he's doing. And like, he was killing it in the 100. That was, he was dominating in the 100.
On the 200
like,
there, yeah.
Yeah, that's the end. He wore the hat, put his hat on in the 100 and was smoking everybody. So I just, it was just funny because he was just killing these things. And, you know, you're at the Olympics and you're thinking like, okay, no, you know, folks are going to be on their diet game. Nah, they're eating McDonald's, Big Macs, you know. But yeah. At that point, you've done so much work.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You know.
Nothing's going to change. Yeah.
Yeah. A Big Mac's not going to stop you.
I know. That's funny because I was at a meet in London. He was eating like a chocolate cake for everybody. Rodney was a part of the South Carolina track team as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you eating that chocolate cake the night before you run? He was like, do you really think this one piece of chocolate cake is going to take away all the days of training that we put in? I was like, now that you say it like that, no. I really did think that, though.
Let me tell you, Rodney made me feel stupid one time because we were at, like, regionals in New York, and we were getting ready for the 100, and he was eating, like, a hot dog before the race. I was like, man, you should eat a banana, you know? He was like, really? I'm going to eat a banana? I'm going to be hungry if I eat a banana. So he's the hot dog. And he went out and ran like 9.9. I was like, never mind. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But he changed my perspective that day because I'm like, he's right. Like, how could one day take me off my game? Like
no, we're running one lappers and all this garbage. Like, a piece of chocolate cake is not going, you know.
But we're like superstitious, and I'm super superstitious. I want to do stuff a certain way, especially race day. And I'm one of those people that like visualize my race probably 1,000 times before I run.
There we go. You hear that, folks? Visualization.
Yeah.
Oh, and I didn't even know it was a thing. You know, I think I was speaking with a sports psychologist, and I think she asked me, how do I prepare for the race? And I told her, like, it might seem weird, but like 3 days out, I'm already visualizing how I want my race to go. I see everything. And if I mess up in my visual, I start over.
Yeah.
I don't want to race. And, you know, and I've been doing that since I was a kid. And I thought it was, I didn't think anything of it, but she was like, no, this is a thing. And this is great, and we try to have a lot of athletes.
We tell our athletes.
You know what's funny?
We
exactly. As a coach, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, as coaches, we're always preaching that. And the funny thing is when it gets underestimated. You know, I did a little lecture at the coaching convention. And for me, it's so important. Like, I'm like, forget workouts. Like, visualization, this mental preparation, like everyone does 150s, everyone does 300s. You got to do them. You got to work hard. But that's, you got to know how to run that race. Like, you know, you have to be able to set it up. You have to envision it, know how you're going to go into the curve, come off the curve, like all the different things that you're going to do. You have to know. Yeah. You have to be prepared for it. And visualizing it is like running a race. Literally, like you can almost see it and hear it and everything. It's like, it's such an important piece that people just kind of downplay.
Yeah, I didn't realize how important it was until I realized I couldn't go one race without doing it. You know, that's normal for me. So, yeah, I don't know where we were going with that, but.
So I want to hear about the 04 games, though. It was Athens, you know, which is special in itself because that's the whole birthplace of the whole movement. And, you know, it was a great experience for me. I ran slow. But I want to hear, was that? Yeah, you didn't make the finals at that one. About Athens and your experience and your competition there.
See, now that was something to, now that was my first international team as a professional athlete. So that was different because the rounds, you know, I wasn't used to running, competing every round. You know, even college, it was a little, you know, you could kind of get through without exerting so much energy, but that was my first time experiencing, like, I have to run each round. And then I was coming off of a very long season, college season. So many races. I ran so many 400 hurdle races, and our trials was so fast.
Yeah.
You know, I ran almost every round I PR'd at our trials. So it was going through that, and I think I ran the best I could at trials, and kind of it went downhill from then. But it was just hard to focus on stuff when you have people passing you, and you're like, I know I'm not slow, but why are these people? It's like just running past me like I'm not even running. So it was hard for me to get over, like, the competition that was there. It kind of hit me. Mm-hmm. And that's why the following year it was totally different. Like, I was like, okay.
You actually had a unique heat in 2004, though, right? And your semis weren't, didn't you have the fastest semis or the second fastest semis? I feel like.
Yeah.
And then you ran a qualifying time, but you weren't at the right place, right? Isn't that what happened? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. Exactly. And the Greek girl was actually in my heat, the one that won the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
And when I tell you, she went past me like I was standing still. I'm like, does she have on skates? Like, what is her? She was right. And she didn't even like she was sprinting. It was, like, smooth.
And that's rough when you have never experienced that. Like, that could be, you're like, whoa. Like, I've never had anyone run away from me like I'm not running my fastest.
Chopped the mess out of me. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. So you missed the finals in that one. That must have been rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was so upset and cried. And I think I remember saying to my mom, like, never happened. Never. Like, I worked too hard to not make the finals. I was upset. More than sad. I was upset because I knew my goal for that year was to be exactly at that place and at that time. And I was there. And to not even make the finals when I knew I was capable of, you know, it was like a hard pill to swallow. So I just remember saying, like, this will never happen again. Like, now I know.
Yeah.
And that was it. The experience was good, though.
Yeah. Yes, it definitely was.
So next
and
year,
I'm so,
came back, was the next year you came back with a vengeance, though, right? Wasn't it World Championships in 2005, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and that year I changed my diet.
Really?
Yeah, I stopped eating beef and pork and only ate chicken and fish.
Created a bunch of people who will no longer eat beef and pork.
Definitely.
Like, as watching this.
From that in a month, from just cutting out the beef and pork, 10 pounds.
Wow.
So I was really small as in my professional years rather than in the collegiate running. I was small. Mm-hmm. So I changed my eating habits, started training in a smaller group. I stopped training with Coach Fry, I think, at that time and went to, like, a more professional focused group. And mm-hmm. I think my focus was just different. You know, in college, I might slack off. Say Coach Fry asks us to do an extra run on the weekend or something like that. Sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't. But as a professional athlete, I did everything I needed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of, I knew that it was at that time was very professional, very serious, and treating it as if it was a business.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's how I was successful that year. And I PR'd again that year. That Russian girl was just way faster. She ran 52.9 that year, and I can't even ask for more than what I did. I ran the best I could. I literally ran the best I could, so I had to take that L, and I took it. That was my mindset. Like, there's nothing else I could have did that day. So take that one, and I was already ready for the next
year. Yeah, it's
crazy. Right after
this. Yeah, running as fast as you ran and not winning, that's like, man.
Not being enough, right? So for me, though, I'd rather lose like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Than lose with all these mistakes and you're up here saying what I could have and would have done. Like, no, I pretty much did what I could do that day.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with losing that way.
Yeah.
I take those, you know, those better. But making all those mistakes and losing is like, this is some bull.
And so you were pro for a couple of years there, left South Carolina, and now we're going into the 2008 Olympics. And I'm sure at that point you're like, all right, this is my next chance at this.
I want to hear all about this year. This year, year of the woman. Like I was telling Adrian before, I said, you know, I'm so excited to speak to her because she back-to-back-to-back years. I mean, and you just said, you've been saying you have the mentality. You're just different. I mean, honestly, like you already said from the beginning, there might have been people as talented as you, but there is nobody, one, working hard as you, and two, no one had the mindset that you had. If memory serves me correct, 2008 is when you had twins, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
I had them in 2007, but yeah.
Okay, so you had the twins in 2007, and I'm sitting here just as a fan and just spectating from the outside. I'm like, okay, so she's probably going to take this year off, you know, and then come back and yada, yada, yada. You had the twins. You came back, Olympic trials, and you had a fantastic year. You were beasting, and I'm sitting there at the television watching, and I'm screaming. Literally, I told Adrian, I'm screaming at the TV because it became so tight coming down to the last hurdle to the finish line.
Yeah.
And it was this bittersweet moment because I just knew you were top three. But then at the same time, newcomer Queen on the side, she comes in, and I ran with Queen in college. So I had these weird feelings. I was like, dang, like I started tearing up for you. And I was just like, should I be happy for Queen though too? Should I be sad for Lashinda? So tell us a little bit about being able to bounce back from pregnancy, because at that time, I mean, now more the women are getting a lot of attention and respect for having children and coming back and competing and being successful. I mean, for example, yes, you know, Allyson Felix, amazing. She had her child, but, you know, she placed 5th, 6th at the championships. You know, you had 2 children for your first time, and you were right in the mix, you know, and running super fast. So tell us a little bit about that year.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, many interviews you would hear me say that I went through depression while I was pregnant, because after hearing so many people say, like, you ruined your career, I don't believe you would allow this to happen, and this, that, and the other. You're constantly hearing that, and then you're actually thinking that at the same time that, you know, that you'll never be the same, and now I just have to kind of continue just with being a mom, because in your mind, or in my mind, I thought that it's no such thing as being an athlete and a mom at the same time. That's just what I thought. I've never seen someone have kids and come back and be just as good. You know, typically what I was used to seeing was a mom was a mom. And, of course, you have moms that are working, but in sports, you didn't see that example of them doing both. So I thought that it was over, too. But luckily, I had a mom who, she went through the same thing. She had my older sister young at 18 or 19. And she was explaining how she still came back and ran, and some of the obstacles that she had to struggle with. And she's like, trust me, it's going to feel like you're not going to be able to come back, but just one day it's going to happen and you're going to be back. Just trust me. So her saying that, it wasn't like I was like, okay, you know, it just was at the back of my head what she told me. And I had to take it day by day. But at first, it was just me getting over the fact that I was pregnant and kind of accepting that this is what I was going to do, because it was other thoughts, you know, about abortion and all that kind of stuff. And that was the first decision, like, to do or not to do. And when I just couldn't go through with it, then it was accepting, like, you made a decision and you have to, like, live with it. And it took me a while to even move forward with living with that. So I think about after 6 months of being pregnant, I started to kind of get into becoming a mom. I never took pictures. I don't have any pictures of me pregnant with my twins. because I wouldn't allow people to take pictures of me. I didn't tell anybody that I was pregnant. A select few knew. And when I mean a select few, it was a select few. And then until I got caught out somewhere and somebody seen me pregnant, and then everybody knew at that time. Yeah. But so coming back, I think they tell you to take 6 weeks off after your pregnancy. And I decided I wanted to take 4 weeks off.
Of course. What's
the difference between 4 and 6? To me, it was a big difference. But I get out there and just couldn't even jog. And I'm talking about trot jogging. I couldn't do anything. My body was in pain. I felt sharp pains everywhere. Started tearing up. And my mom was like, well, let's just walk. You don't have to run. Just walk. Like, you have plenty of time. Because it was a year out from the 08 Olympics. So I cut back and I said, okay, I'll just walk. I'll walk until I can jog. And end up being the 6 weeks that the doctor told me to wait, that I started jogging at that time. Mm-hmm. But it was so hard to train, because I came back knowing what I used to be able to do. And I was nowhere near that coming back. So I had to, my mom stayed with me the first 2 months after I gave birth to the twins. So she was there. And she came out with me to every single workout, and when I would try to give up because I was unable to do like elementary things, she would never allow me to. So she was like a big influence at that time and helped me get through that. And week by week, I would improve, and it was like small improvements, but I would improve, and that's what I needed to see. As long as I see an improvement, it will keep me going for the next week. But it took a good 9 months before I was back, where I'm like, oh, okay. And it never felt like my old body. It was like a new body, but I knew that I was able to like get after it again. And it took about 9 months. So it was a tough journey, a long journey. And I think one of the reasons why at trials I just didn't have it was because I was training for over a year nonstop. Nonstop, no breaks. And we don't do that in a normal, typical year. We have at least 6 weeks, you know, 2 months off. Yeah. And I didn't have even that. I didn't allow myself that. And I think that was the mistake that year. And I just didn't have it. But it was still a really good season for me, considering coming back from the kids and stuff. Yeah.
Considering, yeah. Look amazing. You know. You're like, oh, yeah, just, you know, I had some twins and came back and almost made the team and, you know.
I didn't have time.
And what was your time that year? What'd you run?
I think the fastest time I ran it was 53.9. I don't know what I ran at trials, though. But I know I got under, I was so happy to get under 54 seconds that year. That was, like, one of the things I was waiting to do.
Yeah.
And I went 53.9.
You're saying a year before that you couldn't even jog. That's, you know, it's amazing stuff. And you know, I interviewed the athlete I coached, Bruno, because he had, you know, he had gotten into a car accident and came back and ran 44. And it's like, these are the stories, like, you know, resilience, like this is, you know, athletes, man. You know, you could go and do anything. If you have that type of resilience and determination, you will be successful at whatever you decide to do. And this is the benefit. The thing,
you know, with people, they're like, how did you come back? Like, what were you thinking? I'm like, I was thinking that this was the way I was feeding my kids. Like, I didn't have time to think about being treated equally or getting a contract where they put in a mother's clause or something. Yeah. Like, it was no time for that. You didn't see it happen before. And so you assumed, like, it's either flight or fright. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when I spoke with Kara Goucher on her podcast, I was telling her, I didn't have time to even consider what a support system will look like being a mom. It just didn't happen. Like, what they have going now with, you know, all these just people supporting, you know, mothers on and off the field, is, it would have been a life changer for me.
Yeah.
To have that support and to have those type of people backing me, because I literally was like, you know what, my body is my job. I decided to do this, so is no way I can fight against them saying what they are, you know, what they are not going to do for me or what they are going to do for me. So I just didn't think I had much, I guess, rights. And I lived with it. It was no time to think about that and advocate for moms. I'm like, what can I say?
That's interesting because they actually really just started doing that maybe 2 years ago, you know? So it's so crazy to even think about that. And you got my brain turning a little bit because for men, you know, when they're going through things, like, it's not necessarily the same as for a woman. And you just started talking about support systems. If a woman is having a baby during that time, you know, and hopefully she has her family as her support system. But if she's not as close to her family during that time and athletics weren't supporting, you know, what do they do? You know, how do they continue to go through that process? And I know, I think after reading, I think you're pretty close with your family. You always talk to your mom and dad, sound very supportive since a young age. But it's you know, kind of mind-blowing to imagine if that wasn't the case, you know? And for someone who was as talented as you and had that work ethic and worked so hard to really get to a certain level, pinnacle, and then no support, you know? And that's happened to a lot of people, a lot of people.
Yeah, that's what the team for me is trying to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's me crawling and gripping to survive, and that's what you see at that time. Yeah,
it's easier to put people on blast now with social media. Like when Allison and with Nike, it was like when people saw what happens, like that the companies can just be like, "Oh, well, you're not running. Sorry." Like, wait a second. You got to treat people a little better than that.
Yeah, and it's a little easier to speak out when you're talking about you're at the end of your career as well. So imagine somebody that I'm in my early 20s, my professional career just started.
Yeah.
Would I even think to speak out to about a, you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't seem, it just wasn't
possible
to even consider doing something like that at that time for me. So.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they're changing the conversation, though, because it's definitely something to think about. And you have a lot of men in these rooms, no offense, Adrian, making decisions for women. Mm-hmm. And it's like, first of all, if your mom wasn't here or didn't go through with having you, you wouldn't be here. So how dare you think, you know, so to exclude us in something like this. But I'm glad the conversation started.
Yeah, no, I've been through the struggle as a track athlete, you know, and I know plenty of female track athletes who are moms who just have, and I see what they've gone through, and, you know, I mean, a lot of, like, training in the pool while pregnant, like, just really, just serious athletes, serious, and you know, and it's, you know, just getting abandoned by whoever, you know, whatever sponsor, whatever, that's, you know, after, like, all the work they've put in and, you know, when they were on top, you're kind of like behind them. But as soon as it's this tough time, you just abandon support. That's wrong.
Well,
I was going to say, Adrian, not to call you out or anything, but you just referred to it as tough times. Like, you're pregnant. It's you know what I mean?
I know.
It's not necessarily tough
times. Well, I wasn't just thinking pregnancy. I think I was thinking, you know, and more than that, but you're right. Yeah, it's not tough times. It's like life, like just normal part of my life. Like, it's not, you know, I shouldn't be penalized because I'm, you know, living.
Yeah, a normal part of the life cycle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's okay to call me out if I say something that, you know, it's all good.
Also, we need permission to call you out now. I'm just playing.
Oh, Lord. Hey, hold on now. Hold on. Stop it.
Okay. No, but yeah, so I don't know. It's just, I think in general, though, athletes, and we can like all come under this umbrella where you're kind of just thrown to the wayside when you're not what's considered to be valuable to these companies.
Yeah.
So, and I, women or males, like, they just throw you away. And that's sad to me, too. You see a lot of that. And I feel like that has happened as well with me transitioning out of a being a professional athlete. And it's like, hold on. Like, I ran for the country. I did well for the country. Been a spokesperson for some of these big companies. And that was just then, and now is now. So, yeah. You know, it's hard to see that happening. And then when you're a part of that whole process, it's like, oh, gosh. So a lot of stuff needs to change, along with, you know, accepting mothers as athletes and showing that they're still of value when they become a mother. So,
yeah.
I mean, speaking of, though, you're one of those mothers who then came back several times after 2008 and crushed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Crushed it. I think that next year. What's that?
I ran better after everything. All my accolades came after having the twins. Yeah. Crazy.
Yep. I think, what is it? Silver again at World Championships, silver at the Olympics, gold at World Championships in a relay. Like, you were rolling. Yeah. So it's impressive.
And my mom was my coach at the time too.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when I moved home. I needed help with the twins.
Your mom sounds pretty dope. I'm just saying.
She's a good coach. She's a good coach. And it's sad because that's another hurdle too. No pun intended, but female coaches, it's not enough of them as well. And they're kind of looked at less than when she's really a good coach. Yeah. So it's sad that she's still not coaching professionally. It's hard for her to get athletes just because she is a woman, I believe. That's my thoughts. But yeah, she was dope. She's a good coach.
How long did your mom coach you?
She started coaching me in the fall of 2008. So after that season where I didn't make that 08 team, I moved home because I needed help with the boys and started training with her. And she was my amateur coach too.
Nice.
She had a track team and I was under her there too. So yeah, 2008 until I retired, which was about 2017 or so, 16, 17.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's pretty cool. The 2012, you went ahead and you picked up silver medal in four hurdles, right? And so this was after, so in 08, you didn't make the team. In 2012, you picked up silver. So tell me about that. I know it had to be emotional. I mean, that's, you know, you're coming back with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that year, I was coming off of that world championship gold, the individual gold.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is my time. Like, now it's time to, like, seal the deal. And I ended up getting hurt. I tore my hamstring almost off the bone.
Oh, no.
Wow.
It was horrible. So I was basically coming back from an injury at trials. I ran bad at trials. I made the team, which I knew I could. I'm like, okay, I don't feel like I'll have issues at trials, but I don't know how ready I will be at the Olympic Games. So, I made the team, still some aches with my hamstring and, no, my mom, she said, I just don't know how you ran as fast as you did because I honestly thought that you did that well. She said, I just don't know how you did it. She said, you really ran off of pure will. She said, I really believe that. She said that brought you through. You cannot be upset about losing this race with Shinda because you literally 3 months ago couldn't walk. So anyway, that's what I was dealing with going into the Olympic Games, is like worrying about this injury and at the same time not letting it defeat me. So it was a tug of war between those two thoughts. But once it was game time, you know, it was game time. I just remember being in the bullpen, and I laugh about this story because I spoke with the sports psychologist before that race, just having conversation, because I always felt that I didn't need help to prepare for a race. Like, I knew how to do that. But just having conversation, and I guess he was kind of checking in to see how I was doing, as he should. And then he said, you need to take time. And I always tell the story because it's funny to me. You need to take time to just, like, embrace the moment and really think about, like, what you're doing. And I'm like, when? And he's like, before your race, like, when you're down there, just take time to kind of, you know, fill it in. And I'm like, who has time to do that? Like, we're preparing to run. What do you mean? I know he was looking at me like, oh my God. But I was like, what are you talking about? I don't have time to think about what I'm thinking about what I'm about to do, not about the moment. But so when I was in the bullpen, I thought about him saying that. And this is literally before they're taking us out to the track. And I said to myself, this is me taking time to take in the moment. In my head, I'm saying this, and I started laughing to myself out loud. I'm like, wow. You're silly, Shinda. So then I literally took something, and I was like, this is me being in the moment. And then I laughed, and then it was like back to game face. Like, but so I always laugh. Like, I have that story to tell now because of him. And then I went on the track, and I remember saying, like, this is it. This is your time to, like, get that gold medal. This is it. And it was like, on your mark. And then I zoned out. I can't even tell you, I don't know what happens to me when it's like on your mark. It's like complete silence. I can have like thoughts in my head thinking about my race. All right, this is the first hurdle. This is the second hurdle. This is what I'm doing until they're like, on your mark. And then it's like,
yep.
Wow. There. And so I can't tell you what I was thinking getting into the blocks or anything. I just know I was in the zone. And I remember feeling kind of tired coming off of the last curve. And I'm like, all right, don't exert all of your energy. You need to have some coming off of that last hurdle. I'm talking to myself while I run. And I'm like, you normally mess up at that ninth hurdle. Be careful. Watch this hurdle. You're doing this. You're doing that. So I do the ninth hurdle fine. And the Russian chick is in front of me slightly. And I know she's there. And she ends up messing up over the last hurdle. And I didn't. I was on my steps. My stride pattern was good. And I made the hurdle. And I closed it on her. And I'm like, I'm going to get her. And I just remember saying no to myself because I couldn't catch her. Once I crossed that finish line, people were like, who won? I knew I lost. Like, I knew it. And I was just sitting there like, how can I come this close and not do it? I was so disappointed. I just remember walking off. I told her good job, and I walked off, and I remember doing the interview, and I ran it back and watched my face, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I couldn't even hide the fact. Yeah. It was so bad, like, oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
People were like, they were in my inbox saying like, oh my God, you shouldn't be that way. You did so well, and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, it wasn't that I was mad. It's just when you know you're capable of doing something and you don't do it, it's like, what the heck? I'm like, what can I compare it to? That's a bad comparison. I won't use that one. But it's like, think about an infant, a toddler, knowing that they can walk. So they're standing up on the furniture, they can let go and, you know, by themselves, and then they fall.
Yeah.
They can take one step and then they fall. Mm-hmm. Imagine how they think. Why isn't it happening? I know I can do it. I took one step, but I keep, you know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of what it is. Like, you know you can do it and you're there. You see steps of your progression. You see where you came from. You see where you could go, and then it doesn't happen. It's like dangling something in your face and then snatching it away. So anyway, so that's kind of how I felt. It's like, and I tell people, it's not me being conceited. It's just when you know something, you know it. You know what you were meant to do. You know what you could have done. And that's why it's harder to get over that. Mm-hmm. And then to come to find out that, you know, she's, the winner is up for arbitration coming in, I think, July 2nd, 8 years later, mm-hmm. it's like, that makes it even worse.
Yep. Hold on now.
Yeah.
Hold on now.
I mentioned this to Adrian on the phone a couple of days. I said, do you know anything about? I said, you know what? I don't want to speculate. I don't want to start anything.
You about to get this gold. Okay. Well, that would be a great end to the tale right there, getting the gold.
In some ways it would, and then a lot of ways it's not.
I know. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
It is,
but
definitely
I still want to get gold, so it's like,
Yeah, hey, I'm changing that title. I'll change it now.
Hey, yes.
On Instagram, you'll see it. But
I mean, you know, because as hard as you worked and you've been a beast since, like you said, you were racing kids when you were 5 and 7, like, that all led up to you winning the gold medal. That was how it was supposed to end. And somebody, you know, I mean, I'm not going to speculate, but I'm just saying, if someone took substances to beat you, to gain the edge over you, and you did everything, like you went through this entire journey, and yeah, you need to get that goal. I hope the person didn't do it, but if they did, I hope that justice prevails.
Formalities, you know, if they're setting a... You know what I mean?
I mean, what they said about the, you know, what came out about the Russian, you know, Olympic team and stuff, like, that was crazy. So, and then, let's be honest, she beat you. Like, I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't crazy enough to think that I couldn't get beat. Like, I knew that can happen any day.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah,
certain things are I've
seen you train before. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Kind of a beast, so.
Sad.
So, what are you doing now, Shin? What's life like now, post-track?
Yeah. It's so tough transitioning. So, I do some contract work. So, somebody might hire me for consulting with sports. Stuff like that. I still coach at a private high school. And I also do some contract work for USADA. So with them, I travel around to different international events from amateur to professional level. And I'm an educator. I tell about a testing system and supplements and the process that you can look forward to when getting drug tested, or how you can go about finding out about different things that you're taking and stuff like that. So I do that too, but nothing has really been solid that I would call a career, changing careers. So I'm always truthful about how the transition is tough for someone like me, and I would think for all of us that we competed in Olympians like yourself, that if we don't want to go the coaching route, it's difficult to get into companies because they're saying that you need experience, and you spent 10 plus years building a career, which now looks like a different lifetime, that they don't allow you to apply to, you know, that role. So it's hard to tell someone you were the best at something in the world, and that doesn't matter.
Yes.
That's hard. Wow.
It is tough. I mean, and I know a lot of track field athletes go through this. You know, you go from being the best, and it's like, and it's unfortunate because in some systems, some countries, they take care of their Olympians and champions and medalists. Like, you win a gold medal, a silver medal, you should have a house, and you should be taken care of because you represented the country. And you committed so much time. It's like, you have no job experience. I've been doing this for 30 years, my whole life. This is what I've done. It shows my commitment, everything. And it's,
and not
it
doesn't only that, just think about dealing with, at one point, my family, I was managing myself along with my, you know, husband, but I'm dealing with companies, negotiations, public speaking, being a brand ambassador for company. Like, it's a lot of things that I did, and I know the terminology of a lot of things that I think the average person walking in the at entry level wouldn't know, because you know you'll have to start at entry level. But I know that the average person at entry level wouldn't know a ton of things that I would know just from my experience of being a professional athlete. So, but they don't take that into consideration either. So,
no, it's an unfortunate part of our sport. And I remember when I first stopped running, because the issue is you end up being 30 years old and not having a job. So I got this little part-time job working at Canon, and I'm glad I left that and volunteer coached at FAMU to get in the coaching game, which was a whole nother struggle. But what made me leave this job is because I remember I was in training and I was like, man, this is not really what I would end up doing. But I had a screen, my screen on my computer was a picture of me running at like the world championship in like Paris or no, Berlin. And I remember being in a training class, and the training guy, you know, I was like, hey, look at this. You know, I used to run at the world championship. And in front of everybody, he said, you're living in the past.
Oh, wow.
It was so embarrassing. It was uncalled for. I don't know why he did it, but he really, and I thought about it for so long. And I was like, man, I used to be good at this. And now I'm being looked at like I'm just, you know, shut up and, you know, answer the phone, you know. And that made me leave that job and get back into what I knew. But that's sad. You know, I had already been an Olympian at that point. Everything, you go through all these experiences, and then this is how you get treated when you're done.
I know it's horrible. And then, like I tell a lot of people, like most jobs or positions are things that you have to train for anyway. So you're not just walking to a company and just hopping on. You're getting trained. Unless you're a surgeon or, you know, something like that, like an actual trade, it's different from all these other positions. So I would think that an athlete matches perfectly with someone that is used to being coached and or trained.
Sure.
We're just used to working in a team, you know, being coached. We take criticism better.
Athletes are good at a lot of things, hands down. You know, at Cornell, and I'm sure, and at Penn as well, when our kids are graduating, they're at the top of the list for jobs. They're in demand because employers know what athletes are like. Like, they're gonna get stuff done. They go hard, you know?
You have two good things going for you, Ivy League and being an athlete.
It helps, but out of all the Ivy League kids, they're going for the student athletes because they just know.
That's a smart thing to do. And we're so competitive and motivated, we naturally just want to be successful at everything we do. You know, that translates over to everything. Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely. So that sounds like a change that needs to happen as well, in our sport. Folks need to take better care of people. You know, I remember talking to Kim Collins a while back, and you know, this guy has represented St. Kitts forever. The best. He's like got the, what does he have, the Masters for record? He's like running 9.9. Like come on. And as soon as he has one bad season, his contract's done. They cut, you know what I'm saying? They just like, oh no, bad year. You got hurt this year, contract's cut. You're running unattached. How?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? So, some changes need to happen in our sport, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you're the gold medalist, so, you know.
Well, I'll do what I can. That's it's hard to stay connected, honestly. It's kind of like you feel a certain way and you want to just kind of leave that behind because it brings back certain emotions that aren't, like, probably healthy. But I always say I need to somehow stay connected, and being involved with USADA, it's keeping me connected. Because if it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't know what's going on. And I'm like, it's no way that you should allow yourself to just leave something that impacted your life in such a major way. So I have to stay connected, and maybe in the future, it'll be with helping, you know, athletes transition. But I'm already an ambassador of a foundation called Athlete Soul, and they are major with helping athletes transition from professional sports. So
what's the name of the organization?
Athlete Soul.
Athlete Soul? Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Right, hear that, everybody? We need to promote that. All right. Well, Shin, I appreciate it. Portia, did you have any other questions for Shin? And I don't want to take up your whole day.
I mean, I asked a lot of my questions, and I mean, Lashinda, you've been very thorough just going through everything.
I know. Great.
You've hit a lot.
I feel like I'm missing out on some things, but.
What's
I feel like I'm missing some stuff. I don't know. Maybe we can do a part two if you guys think about something.
Chill out, super competitor, okay? I just have to nail this interview perfectly.
No.
It's okay. You can come back. We can do it again.
Low key, you know? That's how I am, though. Really, I'm like that. I don't know.
No, we can do it again. It's, you know, I just want to talk to people like you. You know, some amazing
hopefully
folks.
I help somebody. You know, I don't know. I just feel like at this time, all this social media access and stuff, you're not getting real stories and real information from people.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I try to be so as honest as I can, you know, because I am a private person. So I don't just yell from the rooftop all my, you know, business. But when I am asked something, I'm being as honest as I can be to help other people, because it's too many people faking the funk out there nowadays. So,
there's too many. Oh, go ahead, Portia.
No, I was going to say at the same time, I mean, someone who within the athletic realm who has accomplished so many things, but also having to deal with so many of the societal issues at the same time. I mean, you've hit the highest level possible, but a lot of people always think there's some type of smooth path or they're different or that you can do this, but we've just pointed out there were so many bumps in the road along the way, but you just continue to push on. And it sounds so cliche, you know, and people are like, just keep pushing, you know, keep your head in it, keep focusing, keep encouraged, have a good support system, so on and so forth. But that's the realness of it. You know, that's you, you know, and I think we're closing the conversation just even, I was just really like listening intently and my mind was going when, you know, talking about transitioning from all of those amazing things that you've done now into this second portion of your life, because you're still very young. You know, most people like Adrian and I in coaching, when you're in your 30s, sometimes like you're not even there yet. It's not until, you know, you're 40, 45, and then maybe, you know, you're really making it happen. So you have a whole nother life ahead of you. And, you know, I do hope that they can do a better job in transitioning athletes into the world, because, I mean, you're so valuable. The information that you're telling us now, and I can't even say it's information, it's your life experience, you know, it's so valuable for people listening or, you know, who haven't been able to hear this. It's just, it's pretty amazing, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Thank you for your compliment. And I hope to do that for people. So,
yeah, no, I appreciate you coming and keeping it real. I think that, you know, a lot of things are surface level out there. You know, you see Instagram, you see someone winning a medal maybe, but you never know, you never hear the story. And as coaches, we're always trying to teach kids, like, look, life is hard. Things are going to be rough. It's not easy. And you will run into obstacles and walls and all these hurdles. And you have to keep going. That's the only option. And sometimes they think we're crazy, like, no, this is like, it's too hard. But when they hear your story and the other folks that we talk to, it's like, there's a common thread. Everyone has these crazy stories, these crazy journeys, you know, where it's like, man, you went through that and still, you know, came out on top. Well, what do I have to complain about?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's the same theme. And it's just like anything else. When you look at these self-help books, a lot of them are saying the same thing, but they're using different languages. So when I say languages, it's just the way they view it, it's just different than the next person. But the theme of it is like, persevere and you'll get there.
Exactly.
But, so we all have our different stories and we have how we perceived what we did, but we're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's true what you're saying. So it maybe they haven't heard the right story. So you know what? That's what I would suggest. If I would leave some advice for athletes that are listening.
Here we go.
If you can't find another athlete to connect to, keep searching until you hear the story that connects with you. Because that's whatever that person is saying, that's the language that you speak. So, I don't care if you're a woman and it's a male that you connect with his story, that's your language that you're speaking, and that's who you need to find in order for you to get over whatever hump you're getting to. So find someone that you connect to who speaks that language of motivation that you need, and keep going. Find a mentor. Find a mentor that is willing to spend time. I said this before. It's hard to find someone that will put their time into you. It's hard to find somebody willing to do that. So if you're lucky enough to find that, hold on to it and use that person, because it's valuable, very valuable. I wish I would have had a mentor throughout my college and professional years that I could kind of just check in with from time to time, that would keep it 100, that would kind of throw something out there that I didn't think about. And I think that would have changed a little bit of the process for me and would have made it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I would say too.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. Are you on, I know you said you're private. Are you on Twitter? Do you have a public page?
I'm on Instagram. L. Demas, and I'm just starting to use Twitter again, and it's at LaShonda Demas on Twitter, but mostly on Instagram.
All right. So that's where we can find you. Perfect. Well, thank you, Shen, and have to have you back here again in case you're like, oh, I forgot to talk about that. No.
Have to do a part two.
Hey, sounds good to me. Well, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.